This is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Tom Clark here with Family Doc Zorba Pastor. Zorba here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you'd like to talk with Zorba, this is a good time right now to give us a call at 1-800-462-7413. 800-462-7413. Now, in addition to our call, Zorba, what are we talking about?
Healthy places for women to live in America. Interesting. Now, are there different places that are healthier? What makes a healthy place for a woman to live in? Men might also be able to get healthy there, too. But we're going to talk about what the criteria were and the ranking in the U.S.
Oh, interesting. What else?
Autism. Autism. Children who are autistic often can figure out what magicians are doing. What does this say about what they're paying attention to?
That's really fascinating.
Absolutely so.
What's our recipe?
Ricky's Cabbage Foo-Foo. Remember Little Rabbit Foo-Foo? Little Rabbit Foo-Foo going through the woods.
You promised me you'd never sing on this program.
I know I did promise that. That's as far as it goes. 800-462-7413,
our toll-free number. Don't forget our medical Mythbuster coming up later in the hour. Right now to the phones we go. A listener with us in Buffalo, New York. Hi.
Hi, Zorba. Hi, Tom.
How can we help?
Well, my problem is that I have cold feet. And granted, I'm from Buffalo, so it's pretty cold here, but I think that my feet are colder than most other people's.
Now, that's literally cold feet, not that you're afraid to do something.
Right, right. I got married a few years ago, and I got over that case of cold feet.
Now, are they cold all the time or under certain circumstances?
For about half of the year, when the temperature is under, say, 60 or 50, even if I'm in a warm house, my feet are just freezing, and you know I'm very healthy. I'm not overweight. I eat right. I'm not on any prescription drugs, but my feet are just very uncomfortably cold.
And how about your hands?
My hands are okay.
So you're healthy. Drugs are the first thing to think about. Well, what do you do for a living? What sort of work do you do?
Yeah, you know, I work in an office. I just sit at a desk and.
I sit at the desk and staple. Now, that's an interesting job.
That must be fascinating.
It's a little more complicated than that, but it's a desk job in an office.
It's a little more complicated than that. You know, I've got a Dilbert part of my brain, you know, in a cubicle stapling. I can just see it, yes. I am sure that you don't just sit at your desk and staple. That's what you... does this bother you at work at all?
Yeah, but it bothers me more at home.
What do you do at home? Go home. Tell me what you do. Take off your shoes. What do you do when you go in the house?
Well, you know, I will cook dinner, mm-hmm. watch TV. We have a young child, so I chase him around. Just typical at-home stuff.
Okay. Well, first of all, you're a healthy person. We don't have to worry about circulation from a point of view of, is your circulation decreased in your legs? And the answer is no. So we know that because this can happen for people who are older, who have hardening of the arteries, arteriosclerosis, that can produce a decrease in circulation. We know that it's not related to drugs because you're not on drugs, and certain drugs can also produce a decrease in circulation. So, you know, the final thing is this tends to be an inherited trait. In other words, there are people who actually simply have the blood goes away from the superficial parts of the feet or of the hands, in other cases, just like Raynaud's. And basically, it goes into the interior circulation, keeping that going. And as a result, it's the answer is basically to keep your feet warm. There's no drug you can take. And if I suggested that you take a drug every day, you'd probably say, wait a minute, I don't want to do that. So my recommendation to you basically is what you do when you go into the house. You've noticed it at work, and it doesn't bother you as much at work, but you notice it when you go in the house, and basically you put on your socks and you walk around with socks in the house. And I recommend you stop that completely. What I think you need to do is you need to cover your feet with something when you're in the house. It may be a thick sock, such as a wool sock or a polypro sock that you get in a ski shop, and you put on sandals if you're comfortable with that, or house slippers or athletic shoes, tennis, some sort of a shoe like that. But I think you should keep your feet covered pretty much most of the time, and that'll probably do it. Right. In other words, that will do it. Because at work, you keep it covered with shoes, but you go home and you wear your socks. And what happens is there's more air that is getting in and around the foot. And then you've got this exaggerated response where the superficial circulation is going into the deep circulation. So shoes for you at home.
Okay. Great. Thank you very much.
How's the kid?
He's great. He's about 20 months and he's starting to talk.
Yep. Congratulations.
Yep. Now, you cook the food and you play with the kid. What does your wife do?
She's working on the next kid.
Thanks so much for the call.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. Well, speaking of cold feet, Zorba, let's jump over to the Zorba Pastor on Your Health email inbox and answer this question from Debbie in Virginia. She writes, my 25-year-old daughter is unable to wear closed-in shoes because her skin is so fragile that she gets painful blisters on her heels whenever she tries. Winter is approaching and is a difficult time because of this problem. She's tried the heel cushion inserts that get stuck inside the heels of shoes, the heavy-duty Band-Aid patches you stick on your heels, different socks, and softening the shoes where they come in contact with her feet. Nothing has worked. Do you have any ideas or suggestions that she could try to solve this problem? And let me add, I have the same delicate feet that her daughter has, and I
really
get blisters also.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that why you walk barefoot in the wintertime when you're coming into work? Is that what happens?
It's because I can't afford the shoes.
Well, my first thought is move to Hawaii. I mean, that's a simple, easy thing. You move to Hawaii,
solved.
You wear flip-flops, problem solved. You got to find a job there, and it's a little expensive to live, but moving to Hawaii would be it. But this can be a problem with people, and so it's a shoe issue, as you said. She's tried a number of shoes. Now, there are every city, pretty much city in the country, has a shoe store that often has orthopedic-type shoes. Years ago, it used to be that children would get wedges, and they'd have wedges in the heel and wedges in the side, and then eventually we did a study and discovered the wedges were pretty much worthless. But they have a variety of shoes, and they have people who can fit you correctly and appropriately. And I think this is probably a shoe problem. She may not think it's a shoe problem, but I think it is a shoe problem in that she may have not had the right fit. People with triple E's or triple A's can never get the right fit because shoes are made for the middle of the road people. And so I think that's crucial, number one. Number two, while we're on it, it's socks. It's a sock issue. And one of the
She's
best socks
tried different socks.
Are athletic socks. They're ski socks. And what they do is they have an inner sock which basically wicks away moisture and an outer sock that actually gives the warmth to the shoe, to the foot and the shoe.
I have some of those socks and they really do work pretty well.
See, and you already are, they make a huge difference. They're expensive. They usually run $10 a sock, but they cushion the inside of the shoe. They're very good. They now come in a variety of colors. So I would sock it and shoe it. That, I think, is really critically important for
her. Good luck with it, Debbie. We want to hear from you, so send in your lifestyle questions to the show in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Again, that toll-free number is 800-462-7413. And Zorba, a listener with us now in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Hi.
Hi.
What's up?
I was calling because I wondered if I could get some help with some lower back pain. I have really severe lower back pain about half of the time, and like I can't bend forward, and I limp, and it's no fun. And I'm trying to figure out how I could get like less pain and more mobility.
Right. Low back pain is really an awful thing to have. By the way, responsible for billions and billions of dollars of disability. So when did this start?
I've been having it for years, probably since, 2002, 2003.
Okay. What do you do for a living?
I'm part-time a violinist and part-time jack-of-all-trades.
Well, that's an interesting combination.
Yeah.
You can set up a shop, violinist and jack-of-all-trades.
Yeah, that's me.
Those things. Does it bother you when you're playing the violin, when you're standing
up? No, that actually seems to help it. It's worse when I am in a car for a long time and when I wake up in the morning.
Okay, so in the morning. So when you're standing up with a violin, it does not seem to bother you too much. Wake up in the morning, what happens? Are you stiff in the morning when you wake up?
Very stiff, yeah.
How long does it take to work out that stiffness?
Hours.
Hours. Okay. So not 20 or 30 minutes, but for quite a long period of time. And and it bothers you during, it doesn't bother you as much during the daytime.
Yeah, by the late afternoon, it's sort of usually okay. And sometimes it goes away entirely. Like, it seems to come and go.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
I have some very specific suggestions for you. First of all, low back pain is really common. Step number one, you need to go to a physical therapist or somebody who is trained in sports medicine and do the appropriate back exercises. Now, have you ever gone to PT at all?
I went to one in Sweden and got a handful of exercises, which helped some.
Right. But you've got to go often with physical therapy. You have to go not once, but twice and sometimes three times. And the reason is you've got to learn the exercises and figure out the ones that work for you to do them correctly. There are a whole bunch of exercises, and you need exercises that are tailored for your specific problem. It's how your back is actually structured, which muscles might be in spasm, whether or not it's due to hamstring tightness or so on. That is the most critical thing, because the exercises...
What resources of that kind might be available to someone who doesn't have health insurance?
Yeah.
Well, what you can do is there are a couple things that you can do with that. You bring up a good point. If you go to the web, if you go to YouTube and you put down back exercises, you will see probably 500 different YouTube videos, huge number of videos on back exercises. What I would do is you want to take a YouTube exercise from a reliable institution, or you want to look at information that's reliable. I recommend a university site such as a medical school site. Mayo Clinic has dynamite exercises, Mayo, Cleveland Clinic, Johns Hopkins. They're all very good sites. And then what you want to still do is find out if you know somebody who does yoga, a friend of yours who's familiar with yoga, familiar with exercises, to say, hey, I want to do these exercises. Am I doing them right? Many of us often know a mentor, somebody around us who is more knowledgeable in something than we are. You're a jack of all trades. You're a violinist. There are things that people go to you for advice. My recommendation is you go for them for advice. But you bring it with you, information either from the web or from YouTube, and you start with that. That's number one. Number two, for 1 month, I would take an anti-inflammatory. And I would take naproxen over the counter, Aleve is the name brand, and I would take double the dose in the bottle, 2 tablets twice a day. And the reason is, anti-inflammatories are dynamite. If you use them for a month off, and they can get the back to kind of settle down while you're doing the stretching, and then you stop the anti-inflammatories, only take them as needed, and stretch every day.
Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. That's all very helpful.
Thank you, guys. Thanks so much for the call. We appreciate it. At 1-800-462-7413. So, Zorba, that noted research journal, Self Magazine, has released the list of the 100 cities and listed them in order of the benefits to women, healthier women, and which cities they live in.
Healthier women, and as we know, as my wife would say, healthier women means a healthier environment. That's what she would say. She who must be obeyed says that. But it was interesting. Self Magazine, as we know, often gives us some of the best scientific evidence on the self that we can find.
Yeah, I didn't really know that.
Yeah, that's right. No, it is. You know, it's number one in my ranking after the New England Journal and Journal of the AMA. Yeah. I think of self right away, and it's self is self. But basically, they were looking at cities where women were healthier. Mm-hmm. And I think if you're looking at moving, going to a different city, sometimes there are things that you really want to look at.
I see Burlington, Vermont came out on top in this list.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering what the criteria were for how did they find out and what were the things that determine a healthy.
They looked at exercise. That was one thing. They looked at exercise. Was exercise available? Did women take advantage of exercise? Mm-hmm. So, for instance, if you like to bike, which a lot of people do, more and more people do, are there bike trails? Mm-hmm. And are the bike trails real bike trails, or are they sort of on the side of busy streets so that you don't have a chance to be on your bike and not have these cars whisking by you? It looked at the average body mass index. Were women overweight? Were they underweight? Which has to do with the cultural issue. We know that Colorado is the thinnest state in the union. Mississippi is the heaviest state in the union. Mm-hmm. And basically, it's not really the state. It's the culture of the state.
And you just mentioned Colorado. I don't know if they're on the list, but they aren't on the – Denver isn't on the anywhere near the top of the list.
Right. Well, obviously, Denver is for guys and not for women.
Here are the cities. Burlington, Vermont, Bethesda, Maryland, okay. Portland, Maine, uh-huh. Cambridge, Mass., uh-huh. San Francisco, mm-hmm. Honolulu, uh-huh. and Stanford, Connecticut. Those are the top cities for women's health.
Yeah, where did Madison, Wisconsin fit
Number eight, actually.
Number eight, Madison, yeah. Wisconsin. So obviously weather is not a factor in whether women are
Well, they mention in the article that Madison is number eight, in spite of the fact that in Madison we get a month less sunshine than other states do. So how important is sunshine?
Well, I think sunshine, you know, sunshine plays a role. Certainly if you have seasonal affective disorder, it plays a role, especially during this time of year. But I think sunshine plays a role and it may get people out to exercise. But if you look, this is a good example, Burlington, Vermont, Cambridge, Mass., those are not places with lots of sunshine.
Yeah.
It's the culture of the city, whether or not you take exercise seriously. And if we look at the bottom line, there's 15 to 20% less cancer and heart disease, premature death in cities such as this.
Coastal cities were on top.
Honolulu.
You need to be near an ocean to be a healthy woman.
But although we don't think of the Midwest as near an ocean, it really is near the Great Lakes. We're only 100 miles away from the Great Lakes in Madison. Well, another one of those great research articles from that famous journal, Self Magazine.
800-462-7413. It's toll free. And a listener with us now in Sun Prairie, Wisconsin. Hello.
Hi, guys.
How can we help?
Well, I am a 37-year-old woman, and I'm very healthy, and I exercise a lot and eat well. But about 6 months ago, I was at the gym working out and moderately, and I got off the treadmill, and my hands and my feet started to itch, and then over the course of about 15 or 20 minutes, my whole body broke out in very large hives, and my face swelled up.
Oh, wow.
So you're allergic to exercise?
Apparently, I am. So I went to an allergist, and they tested me for food and for indoor and outdoor allergies, and I'm allergic to nothing. And he said, well, you know, maybe you just have, you know, maybe it was a fluke or whatever. And then about 2 weeks after that, I had the flu, and in the middle of the night, I was, you know, sick and up, and I sneezed about 15 times in a row, and then the same thing happened. My body broke out in hives, and my face started to swell up.
So she's allergic to sneezing, too, Tom.
I guess. Yeah. Treadmills and sneezing.
That's right. Do not exercise and never sneeze again, and you'll be just fine. So.
Okay, great.
So have things gotten better, or are they still happening?
No, it just happened those two times.
And that was it. Nothing else after that.
I have to carry an EpiPen now. They gave me Benadryl and an EpiPen when it happened, and it totally made it go away.
Okay, and it's not happened since that time.
It has not happened again.
Well, there's something called, there are cold weather hives and there are viral hives. People can get hives from a viral infection, which is not unusual. And then there are idiopathic hives, which means we can't figure out why people get hives in the first place. But if we look at viral hives where people get a viral infection, comes into their body, they may have a cold or a sore throat or just the sniffles, you can get hives simply from that.
Uh-huh.
And often, when you get either viral hives or cold weather hives, they can take 6 months to go away completely. They can just take a terribly long time to get better, where you'll have a week where you don't have any hives at all, and all of a sudden, bang, you know, you get a series of hives that occur. So it sounds to me like that's what you had. You had some sort of a viral infection, and that produced it. Giving you the Benadryl, giving you the EpiPen, they did make sense because hives can be synonymous with something serious going on, but hives are probably just hives. The fact is, the EpiPen you probably will never need, because the chances of this being an anaphylactoid reaction, which is a severe reaction, are very, very, very slim. Anyone in your family have this? It can run in families?
No.
Nope, nobody else has this. You're the only lucky one to actually have this actually have this occur. So,
yeah.
It sounds to me like these were viral hives. And Benadryl, when it bothers you at bedtime, is good. Over the counter generic Claritin in the morning can make a big difference. Not as good as the Benadryl, but it doesn't make you sleepy. And I'd keep the EpiPen with you for a while, but chances are very slim that this is a serious thing. It's just what you caught.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. We have our recipe coming up. More of your calls, too, at 800-462-7413. Don't forget our medical myth buster here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Question for Zorba? Here's the number to call, 1-800-462-7413. But before we get back to the phones, it is recipe time. And for our recipe this time, we welcome from Manchester, Missouri, listener Ricky Kravitz. Ricky, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Fine. Good to have you with us, and good to have you here to tell us about Ricky's cabbage foo-foo. What is a foo-foo?
That's what I was going to ask.
Cabbage foo-foo is a recipe that I got, many years ago when my children were young, and my husband brought home a cookbook from his company, and this recipe was in there, and my mother always made very healthy foods and was on me about, you know, making sure my children ate right, and she loved cabbage. She thought it was a great food for kids to eat, and she was always after me to find something with cabbage in it, and I happened to be glazing through this book and found it, and I thought, I'll try it. It sounds really good. So I tried it, and the kids absolutely loved it.
Hmm. So, now, what is a foo-foo?
A foo-foo, I don't know if when I'm a little probably older than both of you put together, but when I was young, there was a little song about a little rabbit going through the forest.
Oh.
And, you know, catching field mice and hitting them over the head. So I think that it has something to do with bunnies and gardens and lettuce, and they eat cabbage probably too. So that's my take on it. I don't know if that's right.
Well, I want to congratulate you. If you're older than the two of us together, you are the oldest woman on earth.
Well, my mom lived to 103 and a half. So
oh, wow.
I think part of it was that she ate cabbage. And so
that's part of it. So this is something you've sold your kids, and your kids love to eat this.
Yeah.
They'd love to eat this. Okay. Mm-hmm. So let's go through the recipe. Start out with one head of cabbage, red cabbage, green cabbage. Do you use?
Green cabbage is what we use. Uh-huh.
And, you know, cabbage, I mean, the nice thing about cabbage is it's cheap, cheap, cheap. It's always inexpensive. I was just back in Toronto a couple of weeks ago, and there's an area called Cabbage Town, which is a college-type area. And I asked my friend who was there, why is it called Cabbage Town? And she said, because cabbage is cheap, and this was cheap housing. So I think this is
okay.
A pound of lean ground beef.
Mm. Yeah.
Now, have you ever used ground turkey in this at all?
I haven't tried it with turkey, but I would imagine you could.
You could.
I use ground round because it has a good, it has a tiny bit of fat in it, but not a tremendous amount.
And I think that's important. I think ground beef does have a place. What you want to do is make it as lean as possible, and when you prepare, remove it, essentially as much of the oil as you can. 1 cup of chopped onion, coarsely chopped,
Coarsely chopped is fine.
Now, a half cup of instant rice uncooked. I have to ask you about that. I haven't used in many, many years, instant rice. Why do you use that, and what's the difference between that and regular rice or brown rice? How come you use that?
Well, actually, I think it cooks a little softer than the other rice. And also, I just tried the recipe with brown rice. They now make a brown instant rice. And that works beautifully. So if people are, you know, adverse to using white, you know, instant rice, you can use brown rice.
Yeah, and actually with brown rice, you're going to get more texture, more fiber.
Right.
We always need fiber in our diet.
A little more taste, I think.
A little more taste also. Half teaspoon of salt, a quarter teaspoon of pepper.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
3 cups of tomato juice.
Yes. Now, I use V8 juice to give it more of a kick.
Okay, V8 juice, which
the spicy V8 you use.
That's right.
Well, they have I used regular V8 juice, but they used to make a Picante juice, which that's what I normally used, but they don't make that anymore. I don't know why, so I just used regular V8, and it came out great.
Yeah, and you know, I often, when I'm on airplanes, I use Spicy Tom, which is this really spicy tomato juice. And
but you put a little something in it, right, when you're on the airplane?
I put a little something in it, which I'm not going to put in this recipe, and that's another show.
Okay.
That's another show. Okay. 3 teaspoons of Parmesan, grated Parmesan cheese.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's put it together. Preheat the oven at 325 degrees. Chop the cabbage into bite-sized pieces. So it's chopped into bite-sized pieces. Spray a 13x9 pan with a non-stick cooking spray. Then spread the cabbage in the pan. Brown the meat with the onion. Drain the fat. Very important. Drain as much fat off as you can. Add the uncooked rice, season, and stir. If you want to make it hotter, put a little Tabasco. That's what I would do. Pour in the tomato juice over it. Sprinkle with the Parmesan cheese. Cover with foil and bake for 1.5 hours. What could be simpler?
It's kind of a comfort food, isn't it?
It is a comfort food. It is a comfort food. So, and your kids love this. I love recipes that have nutritional value that are good for the kids. Not much for every serving size. It's only 153 calories. Of course, some of that comes from fat, but I think this is wonderful comfort food. This is the time of the year for comfort food. Bring it on. I love it.
Every time of the year is the time of year for comfort food.
That's true.
Ricky, thank you very much.
Oh, you're so welcome. I just love listening to the show. It's just so informative and great. Appreciate you having me on.
And you make it greater. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
For sending us this winning recipe, Ricky gets a free copy of our cookbook, Heart Healthy, Low Fat, Guilt Free, and Tasty Recipes from the Kitchen of Zorba Pastor. And if you want to enter our recipe contest, it's really easy. Just email your original low fat recipe to us at
Zorba@WPR.org.
And if you want a copy of today's recipe, visit our website at
ZorbaPastor.org. And while you're there, you can sign up for our weekly recipe podcast and search all of your favorite Zorba Pastor on Your Health recipes. That's ZorbaPastor.org.
1-800-462-7413. If you have a question for Zorba, that number is 1-800-462-7413. Well, back to the phones we go now, Zorba, and a listener in Norman, Oklahoma. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help you?
About a week ago, I got these really swollen lymph nodes in my neck, and I went to the doctor, and they couldn't find anything wrong with me, but they gave me antibiotics, which are helping somewhat, but I was just hoping to find out, you know, what was going on.
Mm-hmm. Is it painful?
When they were swollen, I mean, they were pretty big, like size of golf balls.
Oh, my goodness.
That is big. Sore throat at all? Did you have any kind of a sore throat?
No, and that's the weirdest thing. Usually when I get sick, the first thing that happens is I get a sore throat, but my throat wasn't really sore this time. It was strange, though, because my gums were really sensitive, and that's why they did a throat culture.
Okay.
That came out negative.
So your gums were sensitive, the throat culture was negative, swollen lymph nodes. Any lymph nodes swollen? We've got lymph nodes under our armpits, in our groin, on our elbows, for instance. Any other nodes swell up at all?
No, just the ones in my throat.
Okay. How do you feel? Just the swollen glands? Anything else at all?
No. I mean, I've been taking medicine, so I feel better, you know, a week later, and they've gone down considerably. But when they were swollen, I didn't feel all that bad.
Okay.
Not too lethargic or anything like that.
So you did not feel sick. You did not feel ill when they were actually swollen at all. So this has gone on. Is the swelling gone, or is the swelling still there?
It's down. It's not gone.
It's down, but it's not gone. Okay. What I think you probably had was a viral infection. That's what it fits like. Just a bit about swollen glands. Mm-hmm. When you've got a single solitary lymph gland and it appears, especially in the neck, if it swells and it gets bigger and bigger and bigger, we worry about it because we worry about Hodgkin's disease, especially with a single solitary node. But if you've got multiple lymph nodes, the chances are much more likely it's due to a systemic infection. And a viral infection is a very, very common cause of swollen lymph nodes. So a viral infection from mono can do it. A viral infection from other viruses that are like the monovirus, like the Epstein-Barr virus, but not exactly there, can do it too. So when I see people with swollen glands, the question is it strep throat? No, your throat culture was negative. Do you have a fever, chills and fever, which means it may be a systemic infection? No, in terms of a bacterial, a systemic infection. And then is it a solitary node that's getting bigger and bigger? No. So all of this fits with a benign viral infection. Give it some time. It should settle down. I don't think you need anything to get it better. Anti-inflammatories do not cause lymph nodes to settle down at all, but time should do it. And if not, then you should be tested for other things such as recurrent mono, although recurrent mono is very rare, and usually people who have it are very sick. They don't feel good. So
Great. Thank you.
I hope that helps. Yep.
Thanks so much for the call. 800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. Our next caller, Zorba, is in Jacksonville, Florida. Hello.
Hi there.
What's up?
Well, I had a sinus infection in September, and I think I overused the neti pot and got some fluid in my ear. And woke up one morning, and I was so dizzy I couldn't get out of bed. The room was spinning, which went away in about 3 hours. But then the next week I started having a ringing, like a high-pitched squeal in my ears. And I've been to the ENT twice. He says, there's no fluid in my ears now. My hearing is fine. And he gave me some vitamins, bioflavonoids, I believe, which don't seem to have worked yet. So I did get a white noise machine, which I started using yesterday to try to help me sleep at night. And it works, but I keep waking up, and then, you know, I'm very tired. That's my main concern, just getting rest from the ringing, and if the ringing will eventually go away.
Well, first of all, Zorba, can this come from neti pot? Can you overuse the neti pot?
Well, ringing in the ears, by the way, is common. It's not uncommon at all. And people have ringing in their ears often search for help by using things such as the neti pot in order to try to clear the eustachian tubes. Right.
Okay.
So the chances that the neti pot, I've never read anywhere that neti pot actually causes this, but ringing is not an uncommon thing at all. Have you taken Sudafed, over-the-counter Sudafed?
No, I haven't.
Okay. I have a couple suggestions. First of all, the white noise machine, excellent idea. White noise, but the reason why people often listen to music when they're going to sleep is also because of ringing in the ears. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's why clock radios have, you know, a button that you push, it'll give you 15 minutes of music because you know, you get ringing in your ears. But a white noise machine or a CD player that plays ocean sounds, an excellent idea for going to sleep. That's number one. Number two, I'd go back to the neti pot. I don't think the neti pot caused the problem. Are you still stuffy? Do you still have that stuffiness?
No, not stuffy.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you're not stuffy, then you don't have to use the neti pot. But I think the other thing I would do is I would try over-the-counter Sudafed. And often, although that's not been shown scientifically to cure things, I find that when people take it for 1 to 2 weeks often, it just seems to make the white noise get better, especially if the eustachian tube is making a difference, the tube between the nose and the ears, if it's clogged, basically, that will make a difference. So I think what I would do is I would take the Sudafed in addition to that. Time also works with these things. Often people get a viral infection. It's like this for a few months, and then it disappears.
I was going to say, I had ringing in the ears for more than a few months, a number of years, and it went away.
Went away. What made it go away?
Who knows?
That's right. Who knows? Exactly.
One day it wasn't there.
Exactly. One day it wasn't there.
Well,
yet.
Great. I'll hope for that then.
Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
And before the break, Zorba, let's log into the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox and see if we can help out one of our third shift listeners. This is R-I-A-N, Ryan or Ryan. Ryan, how would you pronounce
it? R-I-A-N?
Yeah.
Ryan.
Ryan.
Ah, see.
I work, whoever this is, says I work overnight and have put a lot of effort into making my bedroom comfortable and dark so I can sleep soundly throughout the day. Suddenly, I'm only able to sleep 3 to 4 hours at a time and have gotten to the point where I am only sleeping about 5 days a week. I've tried to use Simply Sleep. I don't know what that is. It's in quotes. But it kept me awake and jittery. My sister said I should not use Benadryl to avoid Benadryl rage. She suggested melatonin. What are your recommendations, and what are these things that he or she has done?
Well, first of all, it's Benadryl, but that's very good. She said Benadryl.
Benadryl, yeah.
Benadryl.
D-R-Y-A-L.
Yeah, Benadryl.
Is it spelled D-R-Y-A-L?
No, it's Benadryl.
Benadryl. All right.
That's the most common ingredient in over-the-counter sleeping pills. They almost all contain them because it is an antihistamine that makes you sleepy. Does it cause you rage? No, it doesn't cause you rage. But it does activate some people. So some people get an adverse response. That's probably what they got, what this person received from an over-the-counter sleeping pill. And that instead of putting you to sleep, it kind of activates you and wakes you up. So I would stay away from that. Doesn't do any good.
So what does work?
Good sleep hygiene, looking back at the pillows, making sure they're the kind you like, making sure the blankets are not too heavy. That's one aspect. And then if that doesn't work, there are a few other things. No coffee for 3 to 4 weeks. No alcohol for 3 to 4 weeks. Alcohol can actually make things worse. Those are things you can avoid that can make a difference. If that fails, then what you do is you stay up late so you're only getting 5 hours of sleep for 2 to 3 nights, because often that will institute sort of reset your biological clock. And if that fails, call your doc, look at a sleeping pill of some sort to get, or an antidepressant that we often get for sleep, and see if that works. Yeah. But this is a big issue in America today.
Well, here's what I've done, and I've had difficulty sleeping forever, and I still don't sleep really well, but this has helped me a lot. Something you do on airplanes.
Yes, which is? Oh, shades over your eyes.
The mask.
Oh, the mask. Oh, the mask makes a difference for you, even at home.
It does. It
makes a big difference.
Because we do have a little light. Yeah. We have shades, but a little light coming in through the cracks of the shades. And I really would like to have a pitch black room, and the mask has worked
that
a little bit.
That is a great idea. That is a great idea. So Tom again. Tom again gives his advice. Follow Tom's advice for sleeping.
Well, that's not necessarily a universal light plan, but maybe on this.
Dr. Tom. It's the Dr. Tom Show with Zorba as the sidekick.
No matter what shift you work, our inbox is open 24/7. Just send your emails to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Stick around. We have some interesting research to talk over coming up. More of your calls. And don't forget our medical myth buster here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Again, that toll-free number is 800-462-7413. But before our next call, really some fascinating information to talk about here, Zorba. The possibility that autistic kids can catch a magician in his or her trick much easier than the rest of us. The magician can distract all of us to the place where he can fool us, but cannot distract the autistic kid.
Exactly. Fascinating article that looked at autism. First of all, we know what autism is as a clinical syndrome. We don't know what causes it. But basically, it has to do with the fact that children often don't engage in the same social way. That's one of the aspects that's key with autism. And they often don't follow the same visual cues, verbal cues, social cues that people who are not autistic follow. And we know that the way magicians work, magicians don't really produce magic.
Right.
But they basically direct our attention to a place that we don't think we're going to be, and then they actually do whatever they're actually doing. And lo and behold, autistic kids don't follow those cues, so they sort of see the magic tricks as not magic tricks. They just see what's actually going on.
Wait a minute, that rabbit was here all the
time. Yeah, it was really
time.
In your pocket. I can see it. I can see it all the time. And one particular example is where they were in front of a bunch of Boy Scouts, and a coin disappeared, and there actually was a slit in this rubber top that nobody saw. Mm-hmm. But the autistic kid said right away, oh, yeah, It's right over there. You just put it through that slit. Yeah. And it may help us with some insight into exactly what this neurological disorder is. There's something called directional eye movements. If you're on the street, you're walking down the street, and all of a sudden somebody looks up and points towards something, we'll say, up in the sky, people will generally stop and look at the same spot. Why? Right. Because we direct our attention to things that may be important to us because we may be attacked or so on. That's really where it comes from. Autistic kids don't do that. They walk right by and not pay attention to that at all.
Aren't they thinking of using this information to sort of detect whether kids have autism or not?
Well, that's exactly it. In terms of trying to diagnose early autism, which is part of an issue, because the theory is if we detect it earlier and we begin to work with kids earlier, they can begin to engage in social activities which allow them to function. It's the social aspect of autism that tends to be the most disabling because other children don't want to be with them and they're not socialized in the same way. And they may be able to use this directional type of test, if you will, for magic to see whether or not kids are autistic earlier on.
Yeah,
and it does give us insight.
This is sort of observational research, and they're looking for more money to do more other research.
Exactly. We know that autism is on the rise. It's not only on the rise in the West Coast in California, where the first data came in, but it's on the rise all over the country. And the sooner we figure out what it is, the more likely we are to help children who have it.
800-462-7413, toll-free, 1-800-462-7413. Zorba, let's see if we can help a listener now in Bloomington, Indiana. Hi.
Hey, how are you guys?
Fine. How can we help you?
Well, I've got a question for you about my left index finger. It seems that in the last 2 years or so, I live in Indiana, by the way, so we get all four seasons, meaning it gets cold in the winter. As it starts to get cold in the colder times of year, my left index finger is kind of semi-numb, kind of a dull ache. But the thing about it also is that it's noticeably cooler. So if I were to touch my other fingertips to, you know, my face, they're all nice and warm except for the index finger.
Isn't that interesting? We had an earlier call with someone with cold feet, but I've never heard, Zorba, of one finger being
cold. Well, no, that can happen. Have you injured that finger before that you remember, or surgery to the wrist or the hand at all?
No surgery, but I have always worked with my hands. The slight amount of research I did, something called Raynaud's syndrome came up, which I thought, you know, and they mentioned something about excessive vibration. I worked for a concrete restoration company for quite a few years and used jackhammers quite a bit. So, otherwise, no injuries other than the normal sort of wear and tear during the jobs.
Concrete restoration, what is that?
Well, it's a fancy name for fixing parking garages in the middle of the night. You know, you go in there, you bust out the old concrete, create forms, re-pour the concrete in time for the people to come in the morning and drive over it.
Huh.
Got you. So it's a quick job. You've got to do a lot of work very quickly. It's a very physical job, obviously, with lots of vibration.
And this, incidentally, was in my 20s. It's been about 15 years or so since I did that type of work, but I've always been in the trades. I'm a tile contractor now, so I still work with my hands quite a bit. I don't, not to the same degree, maybe, as far as the vibration goes.
I do think it's from the vibration. I think it's what you did in the past and what you do now. Because what happens is it can affect the peripheral nerves in your hand and your fingers, and when you begin to affect those peripheral nerves, then it can affect the circulation that is actually going essentially to the skin and make a difference. So one of the things I would do, when you work now with your hands, can you wear gloves for any of the work that you do?
Actually, yeah. I mean, at times, and I always do try to, I find myself putting my hands in my pockets much more frequently, when I'm driving. I stick that hand under my leg if I can, that kind of thing, just to keep it, warmed up as I can. But, like I said, if it tends to be cool for quite a while or cold, it's a real, it just doesn't feel very comfortable.
It is an uncomfortable thing. Double gloving can make a difference, especially in the wintertime, where you go and you get an inside glove liner, which is what people wear when they're skiing or they're outside and doing outside activities, and a bigger glove on the outside. But the answer is yes, you've got to keep it warm, and that's going to make a big difference for this. Okay. And that is the treatment.
All right. Well, good to know.
Yeah. Appreciate the call.
Thanks for the call, guys. Appreciate
Thank you very much. I'd never thought of that, Zorba. The restoration of the concrete in garages, parking garages, These obviously are money-making things, whether they're city garages or private garages, and you don't want to close them down. What you want to do is have people come in the middle of the night, do whatever work they can, and be able to open them up and make some more money the next day.
Right. I never thought about that easier. But if I were in my 20s doing that work, I certainly would think about it.
800-462-7413. Let's get to our medical myth buster now, Zorba. Today's myth deals with garlic. Now, we know that it's no myth that garlic can ward off vampires. That's a fact. And the likelihood of kissing someone goes down a lot with garlic. But can it do the same to colds?
Well, this is the million-dollar question for the garlic growers of the world who live in California for the most part. But the answer is yes, there is a double-blind study published in 2001, just a few years ago. Well, a number of years ago, where they looked at 146 healthy adults over a 12-week period from November to February, height of the cold season, and those who had garlic came down with fewer colds. 24 colds during the study period versus 65 colds for those who were on a placebo. And that one study has been quoted over and over and over and over and over again by the garlic manufacturers who, by the way, make garlic in tablets and pills that are, quote, desensitized garlic so it doesn't smell like garlic.
Yeah. So that's one study. Do you know how many people were in that study?
In that study, there were 100 people in the study. One study, 100 people.
I wonder why it hasn't been replicated.
Actually, there were probably more than 100. There probably were like 300 or 400 people. Why hasn't it been replicated?
Yeah.
That's a good question. Yeah. So now, if you were a garlic manufacturer and you had one study which proved the garlic would keep you from having a cold, and would you bother with another study?
Well, no.
No, of course not. I wouldn't bother with another study. So why aren't there other studies? Well, that's a good question, but there aren't other studies on garlic. The issue is that there's almost no science on it. How much money do you want to spend on it? You know, and what happens is, do you want to buy a garlic capsule or a garlic pill and take it during the wintertime? Or do you want to eat foods that are filled with garlic that taste really, really good?
Yeah. whether it fends off colds or not.
I go with the food, makes me feel good, and if I get a cold, I am happy. So the answer is yes, enjoy your garlic, but not by pill.
If there's a myth you'd like Zorba to bust, just send it to the show in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Again, our toll-free number is 800-462-7413. And a Milwaukee listener is with us now. Hello.
Hello. How are you?
Fine. What's up?
Good. Well, my question is rather general. It's not really about me specifically.
Mm-hmm.
I've always wanted to know, I guess in short, what the shelf life is of a virus once it's outside the human body. For example, someone who is sick coughs into their hand or sneezes into their hand, and then they grab the phone or they, you know, grab the door handle or use the computer, and they transfer that germ onto that object. And so without sanitizing it, how long is that virus active or alive, and how long can it infect somebody else?
Probably a split second. It doesn't really?
Really.
It doesn't really. Most viruses. Now, some things do live outside the body and can infect you for a long period of time. And one of those good examples is tuberculosis. If somebody has TB and they're in a closed room and they sneeze, the particle, the Mycobacterium tuberculi that actually can produce tuberculosis can be in the upper part of a room and can actually stay there after the person has left. Which is why people with TB in a hospital have to be in a negative pressure room to make sure the air gets clean. So TB is an example of something that can be spread. But other viruses, not at all. They sort of last for a very short period of time. Now, there are other bacteria, though, that can be on what are called fomites. They can be on hands and can be on clothing. But from a viral point of view, there really are not many.
What are these fomites? What are they?
Well, fomites are just infected clothing. That's just
well, why are we going through all of this? Uh-huh. Be careful of what you touch. Uh-huh. And...
Well, because, first of all, we don't know. If we look at cold viruses, we don't know exactly how long it lasts because there are no good studies looking at cold viruses and how long they actually last. Just like, years ago, you know, could I get a sexually transmitted disease from sitting on a toilet seat?
Right.
And the answer is no, not unless you're having sex on the toilet seat when you're sitting.
Right.
I mean, that's the answer. As funny as it is, that's what it comes down to. Why are we? Because when we look at the H1N1 that's going on right now, and if we look at influenza virus, we don't know how long the viral particle actually lasts. So we say wipe your hands all the time because the viral particle may be on your finger and it may last for a few seconds. So we don't know exactly what the length of time is that it is. So the bottom line is the reason that we are staying as clean as we can because we have this belief that we actually won't, in terms of a viral infection, not bacterial infections, they actually can be spread from touch and they can stay for some period of time, that a viral infection from a cold or sore throat, we don't know how long it lasts, so the answer is wash your hands and keep them clean because it's less likely to infect you.
Okay. Okay, well, thank you for answering that for me. Yeah,
you're welcome.
Appreciate the call. Thank you very much. And before we close things out here, Zorba, let's help out another one of our over-the-road drivers for a segment we should name Roadside with Dr. Zorba Pastor. This message comes to us from Chris in West Bend, Wisconsin. Chris is curious to know why he gets drowsy when he's driving and has to use the bathroom, but is far more awake or aware when he's leaving the rest stop. So why are you drowsy before you use the restroom?
You mean why before he – in other words, he's driving his truck, going down the road, right? And
he gets
then
drowsy.
All of a sudden he goes, I've got to go to the washroom.
Yeah, and he's drowsy.
And he's drowsy. And then he kind of goes into the washroom, and after
then
he
he's
goes
feeling,
to the washroom, then
feeling,
he's feeling, yeah. then he's feeling
awake.
More awake after he gets – as you can tell, I'm thinking to try to come up with a logical answer.
Let's just keep on talking. Maybe the show will run out before you have to come up with an answer.
Time. Now, I'm trying to think when I went to the rest stop last time. Was I drowsy? Well, I can give an explanation that may be the case. It may be that that the drowsiness, you know something? I don't have any idea. I don't know why, Chris. Maybe because you have coffee after you go to the restaurant.
No, he doesn't.
Well, that's as good as it gets.
Well, if you make your living on 18 wheels or perhaps just two or four, send us your lifestyle question for the next edition of Roadside with Dr. Zorba Pastor. Maybe he'll be able to answer yours. Just send your email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week, Zorba.
Take care, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our recipe podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org.
Don't forget you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. Abbott and Costello, otherwise known as Brad Kohlberg and Adam Friedrich, are the two characters responsible for this hour. Who, what, and I don't know serve as their interns. Our executive producer is Adam Friedrich, and our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidrum. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping you'll be with us for the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 1121Z. More on healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, show archives, and listener feedback, is available online at ZorbaPastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.